You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, certified financial planner, and an accredited estate planner on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com and online at wdiy.org. You can listen each and every week online at wdiy.org. Just click Listen Online. Welcome to the show. Today's October 2nd, 2013. The markets were down today. The Dow closing at 15,133, the NASDAQ at 3815, and the S&P closed at 1693. Last week, we discussed articles that I'd written for Lehigh Valley Woman magazine and highlighted some of the main takeaways from that. As I said last week, whatever I covered, I must have felt was worth knowing or I wouldn't have written the articles. I didn't quite get through everything that I wanted to cover, so I'm going to finish that up tonight. Ben Tanaglia, who was going to be on this evening to talk about fiduciary responsibility and working with trust, had to reschedule, so he'll be on at another time. So we will finish where we left off, and I'll go over that in just a moment. Want to let you know the lines are open for questions this evening as well. So if there are any financially troubling issues you're having, the phone lines will be open, and that number is 610-758-8810. And in fact, we're doing some training on the phones tonight, so it would be really great if we got some calls. We are live. We are here to take your questions. Judy Ann will answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I love questions. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So I know it's a beautiful, lovely evening, but we do hope that you are staying tuned. We talk about people listening in the cars on their ride home. We also talk about you just kind of putting the radio on maybe while you're fixing dinner, sitting outside, enjoying the sunset, whatever. Not quite setting yet, of course, but we hope you stay tuned. The articles that I have, the topics on these articles that I have written about in Lehigh Valley Woman magazine were Empower Yourself in Preparing for Life's Changes, Blended Families, which planning for today and tomorrow, Life Phase Planning Considerations for Blended Families, How Will You Benefit from a Financial Inventory, Return on Investment, Preparing for Social Security and the Medicare Surtax, and Who, What, Where, When, Why, and How of Estate Planning. So we covered really the first four. I thought tonight I would go over some information on Social Security and Medicare Surtax, and then probably the last half of the show talk about estate planning. And I had covered some of that information, I think, back in July about the who, what, where, when, why, and how of estate planning. And I think it's really important and always good to go over at any time. So we will cover that again. Estate planning, if regular listeners might know, it's my favorite thing to talk about. I don't know why. I just like helping people. I think it's a very complicated thing to face. And so if we can ease that transition by helping listeners be more educated in those decisions that they have to make, and I make your life easier, then I've served my purpose. You know, we all have to have a purpose, right? So we will be going over those. We did have a call already. Thank you so much, Ted from Bath. He called in and said he made $20,000 on rental investment. Can he defer to next year or do I pay capital gains? What is the typical tax rate? So Let me try to recap some of this question because Ted's off air, so I have to interpret some of these things. He said he made $20,000 on a rental investment, and so what I'm assuming is he sold a rental property. And if he made $20,000, it means he sold the rental property and his gain was $20,000. Can he defer it to next year? No. Usually, Ted, we're cash basis taxpayers, unless you know you're a business or something like that. Cash basis taxpayers, we recognize the income when we receive it, and we recognize expenses when we pay them. So, excuse me, whether we charge it or not. So we would have to recognize the proceeds when we've sold this. Typically, what you would have is a real estate 1099-S for a real estate transaction on the sale of the property. So that's how the IRS knows that you sold it as well. Usually there's one of those issued. Sometimes it's not, but it doesn't relieve you from your responsibility of reporting that. Where it gets tricky, Ted, when you talk about do you pay capital gains tax on it, it's a great question. And I'm almost wondering, like, how did you know to ask that question? Because what happens with rental properties is if you were renting it over a number of years and you've taken depreciation on it each year, and there may be depreciation on the sale of the units, property like a stove or a refrigerator or things that you may have depreciated that you may have sold separately if you costed out something. Usually you just sell the building. So I'm just going to say you sold the building and everything else was depreciated. What happens when you have a sale of that type of property is there's actually a little bit of recapture on the depreciation. And the reason is if you're taking depreciation on a piece of real estate or a piece of equipment, you're getting a deduction from your ordinary income. So you're lowering ordinary income. Ordinary income is that income that gets taxed usually at a higher rate. There's no preferable rate on ordinary income. When we talk about sales of things like stock or appreciated property, we get a capital gains tax rate if we've held it longer than 1 year. Usually that capital gains tax rate is 15%. In 2013, if you are in the top tax bracket, you actually could end up paying 20%. I'm not going to assume you're in the top bracket. I'm going to assume you're just a regular taxpayer, maybe the 25% tax bracket. Capital gains would normally be 15%. That's on appreciation. So what the IRS says is really the only reason you might have had that gain is because you had depreciated it. So if you paid $100,000 for a building and over the years you've depreciated it, meaning you're getting a deduction every year, and let's say you've gotten $20,000 worth of depreciation and you took those losses each year on your return, or it reduced your rental income, then you benefited by not paying ordinary income to that extent. So now the IRS will say, now that you're going to sell that building, some of that's going to get recaptured back at ordinary rates. So if you've kept good track of your depreciation schedule, if you have software, it's the easiest way to do it. But you'll track the gain on that property to the extent it's true appreciation, or is it gain to the extent of depreciation? To the extent of depreciation, there's going to be some ordinary income recapture on that, but the further appreciation will be at capital gains tax rates. Now, the other thing that happens, Ted, is if in the past you've had passive losses maybe on the rental property that you weren't able to use, maybe your income was too high and you weren't able to use those losses, in a year of final disposition, those passive losses, if they were suspended, get freed up. And then that would come in as an ordinary loss on your tax return. So lots of different things that can go on with a sale of a rental property. Lots of moving parts. So you want to be real careful about how you do that. And keep in mind, Ted, when you have sold that property, you want to look at the settlement sheet and make sure that you have added in to the cost of your basis, the settlement charges, the cost related to that sale, because that will reduce your gain as well. Okay? So I hope that helps. It's a little harder to answer questions off air, but hopefully I caught as much of it as I could. So thank you so much for calling, Ted. Love questions. If you do have questions this evening, the number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. Also through email at yourfinancialchoices.com, yourfinancialchoices.com. We're just taking calls tonight and then kind of going over just some general information about Social Security and estate planning as we go through the show. We'll be back in just a second.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Our fall membership drive runs October 11th through the 19th. Once again, you have the opportunity to buy back several on-air pledge days. Visit WDIY.org and make your donation today. We have just under $8,000 to go. Every dollar donated between now and October 10th will be counted towards this goal. It's quick, easy, and safe. Log on to WDIY.org, make your donation today, and enjoy more of the programs you love on WDIY. Thanks.
And welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions this evening, the number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. Sometimes questions might be a little bit more detailed, you know, a little bit more complicated. And that's why we also have email available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So thank you, Ted, for calling in. Again, calls can be made live on air or off air, where whatever you're more comfortable doing. So talking about, I was just finishing up from last week talking about some articles that I had written, and just I guess it's covering kind of areas that I think are very important and critical to all of us, things like Social Security and estate planning. So I just want to give some high-level information, maybe a little bit of details involved with Social Security. I think that a lot of people talk about Social Security now and making decisions about when should they take Social Security. Some people aren't really thinking about it. They just say, okay, I qualify for Social Security now and I'm going to go apply. And I just like to caution people, remember, what do I say at the end of every show? I say, be proactive, not reactive. And also, sometimes you don't know what you don't know. So what does it hurt to kind of think about what you're doing with your Social Security rather than just kind of go along with what your friends tell you, your neighbors tell you, or what you hear? Let's really think through what your options might be. So let me kind of first give some basics about Social Security. First of all, you know, Social Security is a system that if you're working and you have earnings, you're paying into the system. You're paying two pieces of Social Security. One, through our payroll, we're paying actually Social Security tax, which is what is going to be our retirement benefit. And then we're also paying a Medicare tax. Years ago, when we were all first working, many of us just saw one tax. It was just, we called it the FICA tax or the Social Security tax. And we didn't realize there were two elements to it. And now it's separated. And that's because there is a limit of how much tax is collected on our wages for Social Security, and there's no limit on the Medicare tax. So if we're employed or if we are self-employed, we're all going to be paying this tax on earnings. So for an employee for 2013, the employee for the Social Security piece is going to pay 6.2% of our earnings up to $113,700. So for those folks who are already over $113,700, it almost looks like you got a pay raise if you will forever and always be under $113,700 for the year. You're never going to see a change in your paycheck because of Social Security. 6.2%. up to $113,700. The Medicare tax is 1.45% on earnings, but it's all earnings. There's no cap on that. Now, our employer is also paying that same amount on our wages. So the employer pays half and we pay half. If you're self-employed, you're going to pay both sides of it. So you're paying 12.4% on earnings and 2.9% on, you're paying 12.4% of the Social Security tax on your earnings up to $113,700. And you're paying 2.9% on all your earnings. So if you're self-employed, you're paying both sides of it. There are some credits for any Social Security tax that you're paying. You get a little credit on page one of your return. So there, it's not exactly that number for self-employed people, but basically. Okay? And then when we're paying into the system, we're actually earning credits toward that Social Security benefit I talked about. So if you work for, you know, 1 month your entire life, then you actually are not earning any Social Security benefit. You have to earn a certain number of credits. And I believe it's 40 credits to qualify for retirement benefits, and you can't earn more than 4 credits in a year. It's complicated. I'm not going to get into all the details of that. You don't have to make a lot of money for a very long time, but you have to make something in order to qualify for Social Security. Now, you might say, well, I'm a homemaker and I've never worked. Does that mean I'm not going to get Social Security? Well, no, because if you're a homemaker and you're married and you were married, you know, for a certain period of time, then you will qualify for a spousal benefit. So there's a few different kinds of benefits from Social Security, and this is what we need to understand. There's this retirement benefit, which I call the earnings benefit. You've earned it because you earned money. So we have an earnings benefit. And then we have a spousal benefit. If we work and we're married, then our spouse will get a benefit off of our record. And then there's a survivor benefit. So that if I was married and I die, my spouse would get the spousal benefit if I have earned enough work credits. And likewise, if my spouse dies and they had a benefit, I may collect off of their record. What happens is you're going to collect off the higher of the two records. So the planning for Social Security actually gets a little bit more complicated when we're talking about married couples. If you're single, it's not as complicated for you in trying to make a decision about when to collect, because you're really only worrying about your own benefit. Some of the issues you're going to have to think about is, at what age do you collect? So we can go through that in a little bit. There is an additional benefit that you can get from Social Security. I talked about your earned benefit, your spousal benefit, and a survivor benefit. But the other reason we pay into Social Security is for disability benefits. So you could also qualify for disability if you have paid in for a certain period of time as well. So that's some benefits that people have to be aware of. What Social Security likes to stress, though, is that it is not meant to replace your other savings for retirement. Social Security is not meant to provide all of your living expenses that you're going to need when you retire. In the old days, it wasn't even expected that Social Security would pay to people, because the life expectancy was 62 and they would expect that people were going to die before they ever had to pay it out. Now, with people living so much longer, Social Security is paying out to probably a larger group of people, but it's not going to be enough money over your life expectancy, your anticipated, life, to be enough money to cover all of your expenses. Some people do it. Some people seem to manage on, the amount of money that Social Security gives them, but that is not Social Security's intent. So one of the things I want to talk about is how, or what options does someone have to maybe maximize their Social Security benefit? If we know that it's not going to be enough to cover us you know, all of our living expenses, are there ways to maximize the Social Security that we're going to get? So we'll talk about that when we come back from our break. If there are questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY Allentown, listener-supported community public radio. The time now is 6:20 p.m. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. Phone number this evening, 610-758-8810. We take live callers, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, Judianna's in the studio, can answer telephone calls and write down questions and bring it into the studio to me, and I will do my best to answer questions. We had Ted call in already tonight, and we appreciate that. So if there are questions, 610-758-8810. You know, I didn't expect to talk about Social Security or estate planning tonight because I had another guest scheduled for tonight, and I'm sorry that he wasn't able to be here. So I threw this in, and normally I would ask, I just lost his name, Mark Basak from the Social Security office in Bethlehem to come in because he's amazing. And I like the Social Security folks and their willingness to always come in and give us lots of good information. I just read today that it's, I think, the most efficient agency in the government. They cost are like 1%, I think, of what comes in through them. So they do a good job. The website, ssa.gov, is what I always type in, ssa.gov. I think socialsecurity.gov works as well. Socialsecurity.gov has tons and tons of information. They have pamphlets, which are really informative. There is a link that says, I think, publications. And when you click on that, there's a whole list of different publications that they have. I think I just clicked on, like, basic Social Security information so that I could kind of review some of what's available there, and I printed off a pamphlet that's Social Security Snapshot. There's Social Security Understanding Your Benefits. There was a page called Update 2013, which gives all those numbers that I talked about earlier, the earnings limits and things like that. There are also limits on your earnings if you are collecting Social Security, and I hope I can find that to go over with you as well. Other benefits, let me mention before I kind of get into the planning with Social Security, are, oh, the disability limits. Let me just mention, because I thought this was something that Mark Basak had mentioned once when he was on the air, and I think it's important to mention it. People can be on disability, getting Social Security disability, and there's earnings limits. It says if you work while receiving disability benefits, you must tell us about your earnings no matter how little you earn. So sometimes people think, oh, I'm on disability, I can't work or I'll lose my benefits. But here was something they mentioned. You may have unlimited earnings during a trial work period of up to 9 months, and it's not necessarily in a row, and still receive full benefits. So what happens is some people will go on disability. They may think it's going to be a full disability, so they qualify for their disability benefits. But at some point, maybe medical intervention, maybe time, they're feeling better, they're doing better, or they find another profession or something that is accommodating to the disability that they had or incurred, and they want to try going back to work. Social Security says, go ahead, go try it. They want to get people back into the workforce. So they let you try it, and it doesn't mean you have to come off Social Security. So you have unlimited earnings during a trial work period of up to 9 months. It doesn't have to be in a row. So let's say you go and you try it for a month, and it didn't work. And you go back and you rehab for 3 more months, you could go try it again. So you could keep trying. And you can still receive full benefits. It's once you have completed your 9-month trial work period that Social Security will determine if you are still entitled to disability benefits. And it says you also may be eligible for other work incentives to help you make the transition back to work. So I thought that that was important to mention as well. There's also something called supplemental security income, which people get confused with Social Security. It's not really Social Security, so to speak. Supplemental security income, we call that SSI. That's really a needs-based program, and it's funded, I think, through other federal programs. It's not through our Social Security system, so to speak. And don't quote me on that, but I know it's different and it's needs-based, and meaning, they look at income levels and things like that. So be aware of that. That's a little bit different. Okay, so Social Security, lots of information available on their website. And I wanted to point out that you can also go and apply for Social Security directly on the website. They're trying to steer people that way to do as much online as they can. So keep that in mind, socialsecurity.gov to go do that. All right. Let's talk about decisions with Social Security. One thing that happens is people can apply for Social Security at different times. A lot of folks just automatically think, at age 62, I can go collect Social Security. Well, that is the early age Social Security time that you can go apply. You don't have to go apply. There's no dictate saying you have to go apply at age 62. I suppose if you're not working and you have no other income and you need some cash flow, that is a nice benefit for you to be able to go start collecting at age 62. What happens, though, if you collect, that's called early, you're collecting early. If you collect early at age 62, you actually have a permanently reduced benefit. It's a permanently reduced benefit. So you might want to think about whether that cash flow, that decision to do that today, is going to benefit you, over the long period of time. If you're someone who has a long life expectancy, you may try to see if you can just wait a little bit longer. Maybe you could get a part-time job. Maybe you could keep working for a little bit to kind of defer the Social Security payment. There's a trade-off, right? Because if you start collecting Social Security, let's say I collected at 62 and my benefit's $1,000 a month. After a year, I have $12,000. The next year, let's say it's the same thing. After 2 years, I have $24,000. Well, if I were to have waited to age 64, and I'm just making up these numbers, maybe my benefit would be $1,100 a month. So by waiting a couple years, I get a higher benefit, but it's going to take a really, long time to make up that $24,000 that I didn't collect for those first 2 years. We call that a break even. You have to analyze what that break even is, and does it make sense for you to wait? If you live a really, really long time, then, and we have a crystal ball and we know we're going to live, then over the long time, what calculators would show is that it would have made more sense to probably wait to collect and get the higher benefit. What happens sometimes, people make assumptions about returns on investments. If they collected the money and they invested it, how much more money could they make on it? So there's lots of different elements in that decision, but you just have to be aware that if you do collect at 62, you have a permanently reduced benefit than if you wait longer, and you could start collecting at any time after that. If you're still working and you're not full retirement age, you may have to pay back some of your benefits. So when we come back from the next break, I'll try to kind of go over some of those numbers. I'll go over your earnings limits if you're not full retirement age. How much money can you make working without having to pay back Social Security? What is full retirement age for folks, depending on your birth date? I'll kind of briefly go over that. And then I'll talk about some of the considerations you need to make when you're trying to decide whether to start collecting or not. And again, it's important if you're single, and it's even more important if you're married and we're talking about a spousal benefit. Okay, so I'll go over those numbers when we get back, and then we'll continue our discussion and get into estate planning for the the second half of the show. Questions this evening, the number is 610-758-8810. That's on air or off air, whatever you're more comfortable with. 610-758-8810 or email yourfinancialchoices.com. Back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
Okay, and we are back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We're in the second half of the show, Your Financial Choices. We're talking about Social Security, and then we're going to talk about estate planning. Just some big topics that I think are really relevant to a lot of people. And if I had to tell you, you know, one takeaway from Social Security, it would be just make sure you understand all your options before you decide to go collect. Understand all your options, and then that opens up a whole can of worms. Lori, what are you talking about? And it overwhelms me, and I can't think about all the options. I just want to do what someone tells me. Well, if it concerns your financial life, it's imperative that you make the decision and you understand what those options are, because it's just as easy for someone sitting behind a desk or, you know, to just tell you what's the easiest thing to do, but it may not apply for you. So I did find these numbers. So let me just mention, if you decide to collect early at age 62, you have a permanently reduced benefit. I don't recall what the tune that is, but let's pretend you go collect at 62 and you also decide to keep working. What happens is you will have to pay back some of your Social Security benefit. So to the extent you make more than $15,120, you're going to have to pay back a dollar for every $2 over that amount. So if you made $15,000 in 2013 and you're under full retirement age and you're collecting Social Security, you don't have to pay back anything. If you make $1,000 more than that, you make $16,120, you make $1,000 more than that limit, then you're going to have to pay back $500 of your Social Security benefit. And I believe you have to alert Social Security, and then they adjust your future monthly payments at some point. Now, that could affect your future benefit because now you're, you know, putting back into the system, but it's not going to be monumental. It's not going to make that much difference if we're talking about those kinds of amounts. So under full retirement age, the limits in 2013, you can still have earnings up to $15,120 and not have to pay anything back. Anything over that, you have to pay back a dollar for every $2 over that limit. If you are full retirement age, in the year you reach full retirement, you're going to have to pay back a dollar for every $3 in benefits over $40,080. So it's a higher limit, but you only have to do that up until the day you reach full retirement age. Well, it says the month. Up until the month you reach full retirement age. So if you reach full retirement age in November and you start collecting Social Security in January, it's the year you return full retirement age. The limit is $40,080. If you earn more than that, you'll have to pay back a dollar for every $3 over that. Once you're full retirement age or older, you have no limit on earnings. So if your full retirement age is 66, you could go collect Social Security and keep on working, and then you're collecting your wages and your Social Security. One of the things we talked about was, how do I maximize my Social Security, though, if I have that opportunity? If you're someone who's in really good health, you love working, you're still working, even though you're full retirement age and you have no earnings limit, you don't have to go collect. You still do not have to go collect. You can defer until age 70, and then you earn a premium on your benefit. Up through age 70, you get an 8% premium for each year you defer. So let's say you're at full retirement age, 66. Let's say you have a spouse at home. They're a homemaker. Your full retirement age, you know that your spouse cannot collect until you apply. You could actually apply for benefits. It's called file and suspend. You could file, suspend your spouse. If she's full retirement age, that's even better because that gives her some options later. She could go collect on your record, and then you could earn premiums on your own record. And then once you reach age 70, where you're going to cap out your the premium they're going to give you, you could start collecting then at age 70, and you have a premium. Your spouse is still only going to collect the amount based on your full retirement age benefit. The spouse is not going to have a spousal benefit based on your premium benefit. So a lot of people get confused about that. It's going to be on your full retirement age. So once you're full retirement age, there's no reason not to file and suspend if your spouse is waiting to earn on your record. All right. Now, at age 70, got premium. You get it. If you were to die, then your spouse would step up to your higher benefit at that time. So don't go out and die. Just keep working. But if case you do, that's what happens. All right. So those are just some kind of general observations about Social Security. There's lots more planning around that, lots more to talk about and discuss and to analyze and to do break evens. There's calculators out there that can help with all those decisions. Social Security offices may or may not be able to get into all of that with you. Sometimes it's a matter of considering what your cash flow is and, you know, is it worth it for you to wait? Is your health good? Are you someone who has a long life expectancy? Do you have health issues? So there's lots of reasons around waiting or not waiting that are more than just financial. So consider all that as well. So no one should be able to make that decision for you but you. Not to say you can't get some help in making that decision and thinking it through, but you definitely need to, in the end, make that decision for yourself. So just understand all the options. Be proactive. All right? Folks, if you have questions this evening, the number is 610-758-8810. And we can take calls live, or we can take calls just off air. So you can call in and give your question to Judy Ann. Judy Ann can bring the question into me, whatever works. So 610-758-8810. Let's talk about another big topic, which I think is applicable to everyone, which is estate planning. And why is it applicable in particular to listeners of WDIY is because our listening audience is mainly Pennsylvania and parts of New Jersey. And Pennsylvania and New Jersey happen to both be states that have an inheritance tax. And New Jersey also has an estate tax. So why is that important to mention? Let me just mention for New Jersey first, because a lot of people don't realize that. New Jersey has an inheritance tax. If it's going to children, if it's going to spouse or children, it's at zero. So a lot of people just, you know, disregard it. They don't worry about it. They think, oh, New Jersey has an inheritance tax. If it's going to kids, it's zero. I don't have to think anything more about it. So they might not really be doing the planning that they need to do. Well, New Jersey also has something called an estate tax. And that estate tax could pop in if mom or dad die with more than $675,000 worth of assets. So more than $675,000 of assets, what's that about? Well, New Jersey, back when the federal estate tax exemption, you know, went so far up, New Jersey and the federal also got rid of something called the state death tax credit. So what happened is a lot of states were no longer going to benefit from this state death tax credit. Because in the old days, what happened on your federal estate tax return, this credit was based on your federal number. And if the estate, the decedent's estate, benefited from this federal state death tax credit, that amount would get paid to these states because the states said, hey, if you're going to get a credit on your federal return for that, then we want that money. Well, when the federal estate exemption went up so high and then they got rid of the federal estate death tax credit, a lot of states realized they weren't going to have that revenue anymore. So they scrambled trying to say, how can I get that revenue? Well, New Jersey came up with something called the New Jersey estate tax that said, we're going to still make that state death tax credit calculation as if someone died in 2001 based on your numbers today. So if you had $1 million estate in New Jersey, you're over the $675,000. We actually have to pull up a 2001 federal estate tax return, run the numbers, see what the federal state death tax credit would have been in 2001, and if there is an amount there, you have to pay that to New Jersey. All right? So a lot of times what happens is people will say, well, with my spouse, you know, federal would have allowed a marital deduction. There's no tax that applies at that point. And so we're not going to have to worry about that. Well, there's some calculations that you have to go through. Sometimes it makes sense to still look at what that federal estate tax looks like for making choices about credit shelter trust and things like that. Because if we could apply that at the first death, even though we don't need that these days, we may apply it because if we know that there's going to be a New Jersey estate tax that pops up, then we want to do those calculations. So I'm getting a little into a complicated area, and I don't mean to. I tend to love the complicated stuff, and I apologize. But the big awareness for you folks in New Jersey is if you are dealing with family members who have estates over $675,000, you might not need to think about planning before someone dies. And then even when someone dies, you might want to think about planning to maybe save taxes on the second spouse to die. So just because there is zero inheritance tax to spouses and children does not mean that your estate is not going to be subject to some kind of tax in New Jersey, and it's the New Jersey estate tax that you have to pay attention to. We had a call come in from Bill in Bethlehem. He said he's 58 years old and living paycheck to paycheck. How would estate planning help him? Well, Bill, you're living paycheck to paycheck. So when we talk about estate planning, I would probably ask you, first of all, do you have any assets? Because sometimes people can be living paycheck to paycheck, but they still might have assets like a home or a car or personal property. You might have life insurance. So when you look at estate planning, sometimes estate planning is for us while we're alive. We want to make sure that we have an estate to live on. So estate planning isn't just about when you die. It's about making sure you have enough money to live on. What are you going to do about, you know, living cost in a long-term care facility if you need that? So if you're paycheck to paycheck, Bill, and you told me that you don't have any assets, then I might say, well, would you qualify for any governmental benefits at this point? Should you be looking at Medicaid benefits if that were the issue? I don't know what kind of income you have when you have paycheck to paycheck. People who make $800,000 a year could be paycheck to paycheck. And there's people who can make $14,000 a year on Social Security and live a very fine life. And I know that because my mother does. So, you know, paycheck to paycheck could mean a lot of different things. It could mean that you're spending too much. But bottom line for you for estate planning is if you have assets, whether it's a home, a car, personal property, if something were to unforeseen happen to you and you were to die, who's going to get those assets? And if something were to happen to you that you become incapacitated, estate planning would say, hey, Bill, is there a power of attorney somewhere? Is there a trust? Is there health directives? If you're in a hospital and you're plugged in somewhere, who's going to make those decisions for you? So that's estate planning. And you can get services. I think there's probably organizations that help people who may not have the means to afford estate planning. You find attorneys who will do pro bono work free of charge. I'm not aware of the details of that, but I know I've heard of it, so I'm sure that could help. So estate planning for someone who's living paycheck to paycheck, you want to see, do you have assets? Who's going to get them? What do your bank accounts look like? Do you have life insurance? Do you have credit card debt? Do you have maybe disability benefits? If you could be disabled at some point, who's the beneficiary on retirement accounts that you might have through work? Sometimes employers put money into retirement accounts. Even if you don't, there may be a benefit there. There may be group life insurance at work. So estate planning would involve all of that. Bill, thank you for calling in. I hope I answered your question. I appreciate it. If you have questions this evening, the number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station, your source for NPR news, local public affairs programming, and an outstanding mix of hand-picked music. Folks, the time now is 6:45 p.m. Now back to our program.
Thank you, Jeff. Phone number this evening, 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. Thanks for the call this evening, the calls, plural. This evening, you can call live on air or off air, whatever is most comfortable. So, estate planning. Talked probably too long about the New Jersey estate tax. It confuses a lot of people, and I apologize, but it's something to be aware of. Make sure you do your planning, and that's for my New Jersey listeners. So we appreciate you listening from across state lines. I think that is a more complicated scheme of things, so awareness is key. In Pennsylvania, we have an inheritance tax for residents or for people who have real estate in or businesses in Pennsylvania. You may be subject to inheritance tax even if you're not a resident. So there is a non-resident Pennsylvania inheritance tax return as well. So if you know people who have property like in the Poconos or someplace and they may be a resident of New York, they should be doing some estate planning as well. For those folks who are residents of Pennsylvania, you need to be aware of what is subject to inheritance tax and how that tax is calculated. Basically, in Pennsylvania, the inheritance tax is based on your relationship of who to whom you're transferring assets. So if you are transferring assets to a spouse, the spousal rate is zero. It wasn't always zero, but it is zero now and has been for many years. So you might think, oh, I don't have to do estate planning because everything's going to my spouse. Well, sometimes you're wrong. Sometimes you didn't realize that maybe you didn't have everything going to your spouse because it might not be going through your will. You might have a beneficiary designation on an account that you forgot about. You named your parent or you named a child a beneficiary. So you can't always make assumptions because things don't automatically go to the spouse. A lot of times people think that. It doesn't automatically happen. So if you're someone who has, you like to keep your assets separate from your spouse and you have a brokerage account and it's all in your name alone, well, that doesn't necessarily automatically go to your spouse. If you have an asset in your name alone, we have to look to your will to see who gets it. That makes it a probate asset. That complicates the process a little bit for a surviving spouse. It's not overly burdensome, but it could complicate it a little bit. Then we have to file an inheritance tax return. We're not filing the inheritance tax return just to report that brokerage account, though. We would also say, what else did the decedent have control over? And typically, we have control over things like our retirement accounts, our IRAs, our pensions, our annuities, things like that. So even though those assets are passing to a spouse at zero, if in our case, we have the spouse as the beneficiary, it would be at zero tax, we still have to report those assets. What we don't have to report when there's a husband and wife are joint assets. If I have a joint account with my child, I do have to report that. There's a difference between probate assets and non-probate assets. These are all things that you need to understand. You talk to your attorney about this. You meet with your attorney. You come in with a list of your assets, a list of your liabilities. You look at how they're titled. You look at beneficiary designations. This is all while you're alive, You're pre-planning. You're doing your estate planning. You're being proactive. So you have your list of your assets, your liabilities, who owns them, how are they titled, who are your beneficiaries, not just who are your beneficiaries, but who are your primary beneficiaries? Who are your contingent beneficiaries? We always have to talk about contingencies. We always have to assume we're going to both, you know, if we're husband and wife, we're going to die together. So then who gets everything? So typically we see spouses as primary, kids as contingent. You might not have kids. So who's your contingent? So you've named a spouse as your primary, and that's all you're worried about because you don't have kids. But you don't realize, who are your contingents? Maybe you want it going to your brother or your sister or both your brother and your sister if something were to happen to both of you. What if you have a niece or a nephew, your favorite niece or nephew? What if you have a charity that you would like it to go to? If you don't have a contingent beneficiary listed on retirement accounts or life insurance, and your primary beneficiary, whether it's a spouse or somebody else, if your primary beneficiary predeceases you and you never update it or dies in a simultaneous event with you, who is the next person in line to get your assets? So you always want to make sure you think that through. That's part of the planning. It's just being a good steward. I had a client once say, I want to be a good steward of my money. And I just was so impressed with that. Thinking through your estate planning, even for after you're gone. So you can name a charity as well as a contingent beneficiary. I like using charities as beneficiaries on IRA accounts. If you're charitably inclined, maybe you don't have family members you want money to go to, or maybe you have earmarked some of your assets to go to certain family members, but you still want to do something with charity. I love using retirement accounts with that because retirement accounts are income taxable to individuals and they're not to charities. So lots of options when you're looking at beneficiaries, but you need to go into your attorney with the list of assets, titling, primary beneficiary, and contingent beneficiary. Jeff from Emmaus asked a question. What happens to estate if you have no contingency or relatives or charities? Very good question. So if you have not listed any contingent beneficiaries and you have a will, then sometimes what we see happen is if it's a life insurance policy or a retirement account, quite often that custodian or that life insurance company or that trustee will have a default beneficiary. So if there was a husband and wife, and let's say the primary beneficiary was a spouse, and either they predeceased or they died in a simultaneous accident, then that company, and sometimes it's even written in the contract, will have a default beneficiary. Quite often, that default beneficiary will either be the children, if there's children, or the estate. So if there's no children, then eventually the subsequent default, and the company would have a list of how that works as well, the subsequent default may also end up being the estate. So when it goes back to the estate says we have to now look at the will. Who is next listed in the will? So if in the will we say each other, you know, spouses, and then if not, then my brother, and if not my brother, then his heirs, it could be his kids. Maybe you have no one. Maybe it says the charity. So we would look to the will. The issue really becomes a problem when we don't have a will to look at. So if the default beneficiary is the estate and there's no will, then who decides? The state decides. Pennsylvania decides. New Jersey decides. So there's rules written in the book. In Pennsylvania, we have the fiduciary code. It's the PEF code, Pennsylvania's estate fiduciary code. And it dictates who is the next beneficiary. So that's when it starts going to, okay, children, no, spouse, no spouse, children, no children, parents, no parents, siblings, no siblings. Then, okay, aunts, uncles, cousins, that kind of thing. So there's a whole lineage thing. I had an estate that I looked at or worked on. I did the tax work, and there was no will. And that was the case I've talked about before. I think it was about $1 million or $2 million worth of savings bonds that were in the estate. And it went to the intestate heirs, testate meaning there's a will, testamentary will. Intestate means there's no will. So it went to the intestate heirs, and it took some time for the attorney to work with the family. They found a cousin, then they found the next cousin, and the next cousin, and the next cousin. And I think that there were people that had never even met the decedent, and they ended up inheriting a boatload of money. That's the lucky ones. So it doesn't always work that way. So great question. All right. So we are coming up on just a few minutes left. So let me give just some parameters around when we're talking about estate planning, the questions I think you should consider. And what I found for me was helpful is when I said, if we think about it in terms of who, what, where, when, why, and how. Those are very easy questions for us to remember. And if we take those questions, we probably could apply them to our life in a lot of different areas. But when we look at estate planning, I think it could be really powerful, because when we talk about the who, we talk about not just the who of myself, my spouse, my family. We're also talking about maybe charities. We're talking about our advisors. What attorney are we going to use? What financial advisor are we going to use? Who are we going to use as our executor? Usually we see spouses say each other. Maybe we have a good friend. Maybe we have a brother, a sister, maybe an uncle. So you have to think about who is going to be your representative as either an executor or a trustee. They don't have to be the same person. This is an area when you're working with a lawyer, they're going to talk to you about how much you'll be able to control after you die. Usually we think we can't control anything. This is one area with good estate planning where you actually will be able to control quite a bit. And that is by thinking things through ahead of time and appointing the people that you know will help implement your wishes as far as how your estate is supposed to be distributed. That's all detailed in your will or your trust, but then you want to make sure you have good people that you've appointed that are going to follow through with that. So you want to work with who, you know, attorney, what executor, what trustee, what family member, or maybe it's a corporate fiduciary. Maybe you're not comfortable with any of the people around you and you want to get a professional. You can do that as well. So the who, the what is your assets, the where are they? If they're Pennsylvania, New Jersey, do you have assets all over the place? You want to make sure you have an inventory of those and work with your attorney to make it as easy as possible for your executor or trustee to administer those assets that aren't necessarily like right here. If they're in other states, how can you best position your documents? So we talked about the what. Also, are we talking assets, liabilities, who's going to pay the bills, what kind of insurance, life insurance, the where. I talked about the how. The how is your estate planning documents. How are you going to do it? You're going to have a will, a trust, powers of attorney, health directives, living will. How are you going to get all that done? So you work with your advisors, make sure you have considered all the who's, the beneficiaries, executors, trustees, attorneys, advisors, decision makers, the what, the assets, the liabilities, the insurance, your health. That's part of your estate planning, as I mentioned to our caller earlier. Part of your estate planning is making sure that you've considered how you're going to take care of yourself in your later years, the where, the location of assets, the important papers. Where are you going to put your papers? Does your executor or trustee know where those papers are? Where are your beneficiaries? It might make a difference where your beneficiaries are. If you want to give your farm in Texas to your nephew and your nephew lives in Alaska, that might not work so well. So you want to make sure that you've considered where your beneficiaries are, where are your agents. If the person you want to be your executor lives in Alaska, that might not work so well if your estate is in Pennsylvania. When are you going to do it? Now. And then ongoing periodic reviews. And how? That's the documents. You can do a lot with asset titling, transfers on death, joint ownership, payable on death accounts, gifting, and that's all the how. So I hope I covered some interesting topics, Social Security, estate planning, and next week is financial planning week. So next week I am going to talk about financial planning, working with certified financial planners, and resources for more information for you as well for financial planning. Very, very important. And for me, financial planning is bringing it all together. All those spokes in the wheel make the wheel run. So We are going to talk about financial planning, as it is National Financial Planning Week, a chapter of the Financial Planning Association. So I'm a steward in this regard. Thank you, listeners, for calling in tonight. Thank you for the questions. Thank you, Judy Ann. Thank you, Jeff. Stay tuned for In the Tradition Folk Music with Tom Druckenmiller. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.